Blog Talk Radio.
Sometimes I want to light up underneath the no smoking sign. Sometimes I wish they'd tell me how justice got so blind. I wish they'd just leave me alone, 'cause I'm doing alright. You can take your change on down the road and leave me here with mine. 'Cause that ain't my America, that ain't this country's roots. You wanna slam old Uncle Sam, but I ain't letting you. I'm mad as hell and you know I still bleed red, white, and blue.
Welcome, welcome, my friends, to the show that never ends. So glad you could attend. Come inside, come inside. This is Bill Turner, Chairman, Conservative Party of Washington, also known on Twitter as General Gonzo S. Patton. Glad to have you aboard. This is the maiden voyage of the Bad Attitude Guide to Good Citizenship. That happens to be the name of a book written by the Honorable Claire Wolfe. It is a masterpiece. Must read for everybody in the liberty movement. And we are going to be talking about and stressing the ideas laid out in this book and how we can make a difference in our liberty. Join me as I do shows on a regular basis and help show you a path to freedom. And in the interim, join the Conservative Party USA in whatever state you're in. But if you're in Washington, join the Conservative Party Washington at www.conservativepartywa.org. Because let's face it, the corrupt two-party system has let us down. They're doing us no good. They're doing us no favors. And it's time that we destroy the corrupt two-party system, turn it on its head, and we need your help. Let's learn how to live free. And with the Bad Attitude Guide to Good Citizenship, we can. No, I am not getting a piece of the pie if you go out and buy the book. I just know that this is one of the ultimate guides to living free. And it's something that most everyone can feel comfortable with. It's not as radical as the Freedom Outlaw Handbook. It's something people can be comfortable with. Our chat room is open. The guest call-in number is available for folks that would like to take advantage of it. It is 347-857-1197. And for liberals, the number is 347-857-1197. And I think it's time that we just dug in a little bit to what Claire Wolfe was talking about. And her introduction to the book pretty much says it all. And although this book was written several years ago, let me share part of it with you. Every few years, American voters get fed up and throw the bums out. One party sweeps the vast nationwide victory on promises of change or getting government off our backs, while the other party's candidates fall to embarrassing defeat. That sounds familiar. GOP kicked mighty butt in 2010, 2012, and Democrats made such a mess. The media makes much of this, both before and after the election. In the run-up to November, they warn of the onrushing dire consequences. They predict a sea change for the nation. They foresee a nothing less than a new American revolution. Once the ballot counting is done, some pundits go so far as to tell us that the losing party is so discredited that it's dead and will never rise again in our lifetimes. Government, they say, has fundamentally changed. Since such monumental electoral changes swept the country in 2008 and in 1994 and in 1980 and in 1968 and in 1952, and we could probably go all the way back to the beginning of elections in the United States, but let's not. But you can be sure that there will be other sea changes and other political revolutions in our electoral future, perhaps as soon as 2016. And amid all this change, the one thing that actually does change is that we imagine we're changing government. We throw the bums out, and we throw another bunch of bums in. We vote for smaller government, and government grows right on getting bigger, no matter who's in office. We vote for honesty. We vote for integrity. Do we get it? No. No, occasionally an honest politician comes along. But, yeah, really. The simple but arduous act of opening your eyes and seeing the old political realities in a new way can be a world changer. Likewise, some of these alternatives to politics don't usually appear political at all. They may involve withdrawing consent from those scurvy politicians and building lives, organizations, and communities that render politics irrelevant. Many alternatives are not traditional political, but neither are they passive or defeatist. Other methods remain within the realm of traditional politics, such as joining the Conservative Party USA or the Conservative Party in your state, which makes you a member of the Conservative Party USA, and it helps put we the people back in control. Being a good citizen, that is a free, independent, clear-eyed human being making a difference in the world, when all the traditional methods of good citizenship have failed, is what counts in these trying times. Alternate forms of good citizenship change the government? Will that happen? Don't know. But before we start shooting at each other, let's find out. Remember, no matter what happens in the political world, we will be better off for having taken the high road before we take another road. We have an obligation to ourselves and to our children to take the path that will lead us to a freer society than we inherited. Adolf Hitler said, "What luck for rulers that men do not think." It's time that the men and women in this great nation began to think. Politicians and their craft have become far more important than they would be in a free society. About 20 years ago, while listening to the radio, I had one of those whack-upside-the-head moments a person never forgets. an epiphany. I'm sure you've had them. You know what I mean. Suddenly something smacks you so awake that you never see the world the same way again. The revelation may be entirely original, or perhaps it's just a new personal insight, a familiar thing seen in a new light. One person's great revelation may be another's ho-hum. At the moment I got this particular smack, international leaders, mostly from Asia, were arriving at SeaTac Airport and being limoed into downtown Seattle for a summit. The U.S. president was set to join them. Summits are a dime a dozen. I paid little attention until the local NPR outlet helpfully informed its listeners how to cope with the shutdowns of I-5 that were scheduled with the arrival of each dignitary. It was the first, but it wouldn't be the last time I'd heard the term rolling shutdown. In conjunction with the U.S. travels of some prince, pasha, potentate, or military dictator, I listened, first in puzzlement, then in complete disgust, as I realized that squads of law enforcement officers would be detailed to block this major freeway ahead of and behind every vehicle containing one of these puffed-up sultans, obscure mini-kings, and, of course, the vehicle of our own glorious leader, should he choose to travel via the freeway. The mere mundanes, the people who pay for the freeway, the people who pay the taxes of the law enforcement officers providing the security, the people who use the freeway every day to go back and forth to their honest work, would be excluded so the powerful could pass by without having to endure their presence. Not only that, but the underlying assumption, never spoken, not to be said, was that those petty pashas were not only better than the rest of us, but that every single one of us was a potential threat to their princely posteriors. Now, maybe that's a big so what to you. Set security has become more common in the United States since then. But to me, at the time, it was an unheard of thing. I became incensed. Yes, I knew degraded dictatorships and petty little kingdoms kowtowed to their rulers in such fashion. But the idea that politicians, foreign or domestic, should be so absurdly coddled, and that Americans should be shoved out of the way like medieval peasants, well, it pissed me off. Those rolling shutdowns brought home to me how far the USA had fallen. The high-handedness against we the people had only grown more pronounced since then, when a Chicago woman, Patricia Mendoza, barked, "You suck!" at President Bill Clinton in 1996, he had her arrested. Her husband was also arrested after yelling to his wife that she might need a lawyer as she was being led away. So much for that whole First Amendment thing. Going a step further, George W. Bush created a concrete and barbed wire free speech zone so he would never have to see or hear angry people. In 2010, when a drunk British teenager, Luke Angel, age 17, fired off an email to President Obama calling him a punk, as the media discreetly put it, Obama had the boy summarily banned from entering the United States forever. Due process? Who needs that? Not when you're a dear leader. Forgettable politicians like Joe Biden and Nazi Pelosi zip around in private or military jets at our expense. When pressed, they make token payments that don't even begin to cover the costs of regularly ferrying their buttocks around. not only freeways, but also huge swaths of airspace are closed whenever some politically august personage might decide to go flying. Now, I'll bet there are some people that are saying, well, geez, these are vital leaders. Of course we have to make accommodations for them. How else could they do their jobs? Funny thing, for 150 years after the founding of the United States, it wasn't this way. We have ushered in the divine right of bureaucrats, and it needs to stop. We're going to talk later about examples of how the U.S. presidents lived and were treated and how that has changed. Millions of people would say it's necessary and good for this to happen. It's for security in an ever-dangerous world. Plus, there's a simple fact, admit it or not, most people like top politicians to pose as pashas. It makes them feel good, as if all the pomp were a sign of their country's importance. Kiss my ass. In that Americans have become much like the people of African nations who adore seeing their leaders in gold-braided military uniforms laden with medals, handing out privileges to cronies known as big men. Never mind that the guy in the gold parade is stealing them blind and mismanaging their country into chaos. His puffery appears to the foolish to be a sign of national potency. Many Americans, having only a vague idea of how their nation was supposed to differ from others, applaud these displays of power, or at least justify the pushiness and privileges of politicians as just a way of life. There's nothing new in politicians acting with grandeur or capriciousness of the gods. And gods forbid, it seems there's been some flaw in human nature right from the beginning that supports such behavior. Think back to the Roman Empire, beginning with Caesar Augustus, whose very name was adopted as a tribute to his self-congratulatory wonderfulness. Roman leaders actually started deeming themselves to be gods, a tradition that more modern European leaders adopted in only slightly less blatant form. The titles Tsar, sometimes spelled Tsar and Kaiser, are both derived from and reflect an aspiration toward the power of the Roman Caesars. Go ahead and laugh, or gasp in horror as I do. But which part of Roman history do we remember? The fabled Republic before the Caesars, or the decaying empire and debauchery that followed? Most of us can't recall a single name of the old Republic. But the god emperors, those are the stuff of legend. Augustus, Nero, Caligula, we can remember those. Even in U.S. history, whom do we honor? Are we grateful to Calvin Coolidge for presiding over time of peace and prosperity and retiring into modest obscurity? Do we laud the boringly uneventful presidencies of James Garfield and Dwight Eisenhower? How about a little praise for Franklin Pierce or James Buchanan, men who did less harm than most? Where's the hearty thank you to President Warren G. Harding, who saved us from a potentially huge depression in the early 1920s after a precipitous economic collapse, sharper than that of 1929, by quickly cutting the federal budget in half and avoiding the temptation to manipulate the economy? How about some credit for great men who declined to run for office at all? How about a round of applause for those prominent thinkers who thought we the people could take care of ourselves just fine without them? No, we're fixated on leaders who bring us national greatness. Presidents who really routinely turn up as, on any poll, scholarly and popular. Men like Roosevelt and Lincoln, men who made grand public figures, got us into wars, invariably increased the size, scope, and power of the federal government. Father leaders, as one writer likes to call them. The terrible fact is, in general, people like best the very traits in their politicians that eventually lead a country into disaster. At first, the power increases seem benign. Then, not so benign. Soon, the pomp and security we're told that are necessary are merely the outward manifestations of tragic alteration in the underlying relationship between the citizens and the state. The change was well expressed by Clinton advisor Paul Begala when he exalted the power of executive orders, when he said, quote, stroke of the pen, law of the land, kind of cool, unquote. That means consent of the Congress, the states, and the people. Who needs that crap? Congressman Pete Stark, Democrat of California, spoke for most people in Washington when he stated on video that the federal government could do pretty much whatever it wanted. Limited, delegated powers, inalienable rights. Yeah, who needs that? Both Richard Nixon and George W. Bush took the position that when the president does it, it means that it's not illegal. Silly fools. None of this fits with the way America was supposed to be, or at least how we were told it was supposed to be. But they were just starting their practical reality. Barack Hussein Obama has taken control and driven the crazy train right off the tracks. Unfortunately, executive pomp and pretentiousness are merely the consequences and inevitable expression of something even worse. Millions of pages of laws and regulations, and an apparatus of millions of petty bureaucrats and not so petty armed enforcers of the rules. We are victims of a vast destructive parasite of which pompous, pampered presiders are the head. The long parasitic worm has entwined itself into our country's innards and the innards of our everyday lives. Look around you. See what the BLM is up to. See what the EPA is up to. And what does this do for us? Because government is everywhere and involved in everything. The mattress that you sleep on, the pillow you use, the sheets that you use, your alarm clock that goes off in the morning, your coffee maker, everything is government approved. A small business owner wants to hire a worker, has to worry more about the forms. Will hiring one more person put his business into a higher, stricter regulatory position? How will it affect the way Obamacare impacts his business? Not will his customers be treated better? Will he be able to hire a quality person? It's insane. A researcher can't find financial support he needs because the funding in his field is controlled by the government, and the thesis he wants to test threatens to go against the political grain and unbalance the fiefdoms of established science. Thus, a promising line of inquiry goes unexplored, and possibly treatments for disease go fettered and wasted in pills. becomes political. Then life becomes cumbersome and costly and cautious, and innovation becomes too risky. Our parasite isn't content merely to cripple us in these many ways, having caused so much sluggishness and so many complications and misdirections. Modern life has become so inherently complicated that only even larger armies of experts can possibly manage the country, and by extension, manage our lives. It becomes a never-ending prophecy. It becomes one of those self-fulfilling catch-22s that never seems to end. Folks, come back Saturday at 1 o'clock, because we're going to talk about politicians, their families, and their kids that are above the law. While they preach the law of the land and how they believe that everyone should be under the iron fist of government tyranny, but not the elite class. And we're going to progress into developing a bad attitude, because good citizens result in a tyrannical government. Bad citizens result in a well-behaved government. This is Bill Turner, chairman of the Conservative Party of Washington. You can find me on Twitter as General Gonzo S. Patton. That's G-E-N-G-S Patton. Look forward to hearing from you. And I'm going to play you out with a song from the Kinks that came out when Jimmy Carter was president. And it was for our lovely country, because they realized what a mess it had been made into. Pay close attention to the lyrics. It hits home and is true today as it was then.
I remember when you were down and you needed a helping hand. I came to feed you, but now that I need you, you won't give me a second glance. Now I'm calling on citizens from all over the world. This is Captain America calling. I built you up when you were down on your knees, so will you catch me now? I'm falling.
Arrivederci, America.